Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, farm business risk programs, the coronavirus, and irrigation expansion are among the issues expected to be raised at the virtual meeting tomorrow of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association. We'll speak with Chair Arnold Balicki of Shelbrook about that coming up on today's program. Feeder cattle prices across Saskatchewan were moving down again this past week. We'll speak with Acting Provincial Cattle Specialist Natasha Wilkie about how it's been going. Aphanomyces was an issue in some pea and lentil crops this year. The root rot sharply reduces yield, and it's not recommended to grow peas or lentils on that field for at least 6 to 8 years. We'll speak with Dr. Shema Chatterton, who is the Pulse and Special Crops Pathologist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in Lethbridge. All that and more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Phil, we had some snow flurries go through this morning. Can we expect any more today with the temperature rising like it has been?
Yeah, there's still going to be a few flurries in the air. I don't think anything else, I can almost safely say nothing else is going to stick because we are above freezing, and what's coming down is just too light to do so. So there may still be a few in the air. The air is still cold enough, even above freezing, for a few flurries, but the bulk of that moisture has now dropped south of the border, a little bit just hanging on right south of the Trans-Canada, but mostly now that core of steadier precipitation has dropped into North Dakota, leaving us with just some cloud cover and a couple of flurries. And again, we may still see a few through the afternoon. I'm not expecting anything significant. And even as temperatures do get up to around 4, just as likely for a flurry as a sprinkle. Either way, they're insignificant. A couple of flurries will linger into this evening. They'll end overnight. We're down to minus 2. That gets into that area where wet roads should be fine. Could be a few slick spots, though, into the morning. Overall, though, conditions will get pretty good tomorrow as we're back above freezing pretty quickly. A few flurries come back through during the afternoon. We are above freezing. There shouldn't be any, A, significant snow, or B, result from any snow that does fall. Just some flurries lingering through. The bulk of what's going to fall as far as accumulating snow goes has now fallen through the morning. For tomorrow night into Thursday, should be pretty quiet. A lot of cloud cover still, and later Thursday evening and Thursday night, there may be a few more flurries that cut through. There could even be a centimeter from that Thursday night, well before dawn Friday. Friday gets back into partial sun. But during the day Thursday, we're above freezing, pretty close to average. Now, normal high this time of year is 5. We're not quite there, but we're close. 3 for tomorrow and Thursday, right up to 5, right up to that normal on Friday with a mix of cloud and sunshine. Friday night again, later in the night, there could be a flurry passing through. Saturday, cloud cover, pretty stubborn, could break to some partial sun through the afternoon. The high is 1, temperatures back up to around normal Sunday, and actually we trend up. Much of next week should feature temperatures that are back above normal, and the weather not too bad either.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at minus 3 degrees, Swan River 0, Dauphin plus 1, Brandon and Roblin minus 1, Show Lake Russell minus 2. Regina is at plus 10 today, Saskatoon plus 9, Hudson Bay minus 2, Broadview Mooseman, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington plus 3, Indian Head is at plus 7. The Yorkton Melville region has a cloudy sky, a west wind at 21 kilometers an hour. 81% is the relative humidity. The temperature is plus 3 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 3 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 13 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is plus 5. The normal low is minus 5. The sun rose in Yorkton at 7:34 this morning, and it will set at 5:33 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Thompson, which got up to minus 1. The cold spot was Clear Lake at minus 15. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Leader at plus 5 degrees. The cold spot Ville-Marie at minus 27. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Farm business risk programs, the coronavirus, and irrigation expansion are among the issues expected to be raised at the virtual meeting tomorrow of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association. Chair Arnold Balicki of Shelbrook says the group's district meetings will be rolled into one online information session tomorrow at 1 in the afternoon.
Well, we're going to have a virtual, and for that, we're asking producers to go on the fastbeef.com website, and there's a place where you can register for the meeting on Wednesday. It's at 1 o'clock. And so we're not going to have guest speakers. We normally have people from the Ministry of Ag and research people at our in-person meetings, but that won't happen this year. So we're going to give a rundown on all the things we've been working on this past year on their behalf, such as ag stability. That's taken up a lot of our time. We've been pushing hard for the feds to recognize the fact that ag, and the province too, that ag stability does not and cannot work under the existing criteria that's there. We're looking for removal of the reference margin limit and take the trigger back to 85%. And right now as it stands, if you put your own hay up, that's not eligible for ag stability calculation. But if you buy your hay, it is. So some unfairness. And so we've been working really hard on that. And as I understand it, there's a federal provincial territorial meeting in November here. And our provincial minister is well aware of our requests. So we're hoping that if he's the one to be at that meeting, that he can really express our concern for change under that one. The other thing we've been working on since COVID started in March, and we just got the announcement of CEBA, for the purpose of CEBA, that farmers and ranchers are now considered a business for that, and which we've been working on forever. It's really nice to see that that's come through.
So how will that help producers?
Well, how it helps is the fact that it's an interest-free loan. You know, if, let's say for instance now, and it's normal, cattle prices drop when the community pastures come out and fall roundups for on-farm happens, and everybody takes some cattle to market, or in some cases all of their cattle to market, so the price drops. And so if you can get a CEBA loan, you can wait out the market, when this glut or this run of market cattle are what the price normally goes back up, and then you can sell. So really, it buys you some time to work with the market. So that's a good thing. And if it's the way it was when it started, you get a $40,000 loan, and the $10,000 is forgivable, just like all the other businesses. So it's nothing special for producers, but we're sure glad to be a part or recognized as part of a business, just like every other business in Canada.
So it simply allows producers to buy some time for the market to improve.
Exactly, exactly. So there's that. We're really happy with that one. The other things we will probably come up is, and we're really grateful for the announcement on irrigation. Our province, they took the initiative to reinvest, or made the announcement to reinvest in irrigation in Saskatchewan. And so now, of course, we couldn't find out the details once the writ dropped, but we're hoping once the election's over with that we'll be able to find out how the feds will participate with their funding from the Infrastructure Bank. And that's really exciting for producers that live close to the irrigation project and would have some type of guarantee of production, especially if water is kind of a limiting factor. So if you can irrigate, I think you're well on your way. We don't suffer up here so much about it on drought. Actually, in some cases, I think we suffer because we have too much water. So we hope as much consideration is given to the drought areas that are going to get irrigation, and that we have consideration to the areas to help mitigate the risk of flood. So we're working on that. We're happy. The Trespass Act, I think, is pretty well gone through. The only thing they're waiting for right now is the development of the app, finalizing of the app. So that's kind of exciting. But yeah, we're there to listen. All of our board will be on, and staff members. And so if producers and ranch have questions, I mean, this is the place for them to ask those questions, and the answers will be provided for them. I guess the other thing I should mention in regards to our district meetings, in District 7, we had an election. Paula Larson, long time, represented that district, decided not to run, and so Jolene Shea took up the challenge, Jolene has got the nod. She's going to be representing District 7 in our first meeting in February. And of course, there's always research, and so if producers want to know what research projects we have funded or what stage they're at, Marianne can fill them in on that. So just, yeah, any questions you want to ask, we're there to try and walk you through it and help you understand the purpose of what we do.
Arnold Balicki is the chair of the Canadian Cattlemen's Association, which holds its fall district meeting tomorrow at 1 p.m. Federal Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau says Ottawa plans to expand the interest-free portion to $60,000 and the non-repayable portion to $20,000 from the Federal Emergency Business Account Program. It's now 12:29 in Saskatchewan, 1:29 in Manitoba, and it's time for the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of People's Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
Another incumbent agriculture minister easily held his seat as Saskatchewan's governing Saskatchewan Party scored another decisive majority in last night's provincial election. David Merritt, the MLA for the southern riding of Wood River since 2016, held his seat by a spread of 5,177 votes over the New Democrats' challenger, teacher Roger Morgan, with 459 mail-in ballots remaining to be counted. Merritt farms at Fife Lake, about 150 kilometers south of Moose Jaw, and served as president of the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities before running for provincial office. He was moved from the highways portfolio to the ag file in 2018 as Lyle Stewart stepped down from the ag post to undergo treatment for cancer. Stewart, the MLA for Lumsden Morse and ag minister from 2012 to 2018, also easily held his seat last night by a spread of 4,507 votes over NDP challenger Nick Lewis, with 850 mail-in ballots still to be counted. Visible canola supplies in the Canadian commercial pipeline are sitting at historically high levels, according to Canadian Grain Commission data. A total of 1.75 million metric tons of canola were sitting in commercial hands across Canada during the week ended October 18th, only slightly off the record of 1.786 million metric tons set only 2 weeks prior, according to data going back 13 years. The commercial pipeline in CGC terms includes line company elevators, export terminals, rail cars, and domestic processors. While supplies typically rise at harvest time, current levels are about 300,000 metric tons above the previous five-year average for week 11 of the crop year. Average visible canola supplies over the course of the 2019-2020 crop year came in at about 1.23 million metric tons. Canada's major railways have filed their winter contingency plans, as they are now required by law to do. Since updates to the Canada Transportation Act in 2018, Canada's major rail companies have been required to publish winter plans and can be forced to pay up if they fail to deliver on certain promises of rail cars. That legislation came into effect after producer frustration over railways being unable to move products to market, often because poor weather resulted in lower handling capacity. In its 2020-2021 contingency plan, Canadian Pacific Railway boasts of its capital investments in safety and a strategy to monitor weather conditions and adapt accordingly. It also plans to increase the number of locomotives on heavier bulk trains, generally used for moving products like coal and potash, in order to better handle any additional moisture on the track. CP said it's also installing new, smarter heater systems to keep switch points clear of snow and ice across its western corridor. Canadian National Railway also highlighted capital investments made to better weather the winter months. It added 260 new locomotives and 1,000 new hopper cars. It boasts of preparing snow clearing equipment and weather forecasting as some of the ways it is planning to mitigate brutal winter conditions. But it points to new restrictions on rail speed as a barrier to meet customer demand. The latest tweak to the Canada Emergency Business Account Pandemic Aid Program is expected to allow farmers who run their business via personal bank accounts to seek CEBA loans. Federal Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland announced yesterday that CEBA will be available to businesses which until now have been operating out of a non-business banking account. To now be eligible, a business that was operating as a business as of March 1st this year and meets the other current CEBA criteria must successfully open a business account at a Canadian financial institution taking part in the program. The deadline to apply is December 31st this year. CEBA provides zero-interest loans of up to $40,000 to small business and nonprofits that have had diminished revenues due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but still face ongoing non-deferrable costs such as rent, utilities, insurance, taxes, and wages. Repaying the balance of a CEBA loan on or before December 31st, 2022, results in loan forgiveness of 25%, up to $10,000. And that's a look at the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's 12:37 in Saskatchewan, 1:37 in Manitoba. Cloudy and plus 3 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Feeder cattle prices across Saskatchewan were moving down again this past week. Acting provincial cattle specialist Natasha Wilkie says rising feed costs and increased marketings are factors behind a decline in feeder cattle prices.
I don't have good news again, I'm afraid, but anyway, feeder steer prices were lower in most of the reported weight categories this week, or last week, I guess. The only exception was in the 300 to 400 pound weight category. That category increased by $1.94 per hundred weight. And for the remaining categories, price declines ranged anywhere from $2.85 per hundred weight. That was seen in the 700 to 800 pound weight category, all the way up to $8.92 per hundred weight. And that was seen in the 900 plus pound weight category. So just to give you an idea of where things are at, you know, in the middle there, the 700 to 800-pound steer weight category ended at an average price of $194.55 per hundredweight. And the weekly average steer price across all of the reported weight categories was $207.25 per hundredweight in Saskatchewan. And then we move on to the feeder heifer prices. They were drastically lower in all their reported weight categories. The smallest decline was seen in the 400 to 500-pound weight category, and it decreased to $4.01 to end the week at an average price of $189.35 per hundredweight. When we go to the other end to see the steepest decline, it was in the 800-plus-pound category, and that category dropped $12.88 per hundredweight week over week and ended at an average price of $155.20 per hundredweight. And so the middle of the road there is the 600 to 700-pound heifer weight category, ended the week at an average price of $169.95 per hundredweight. And so the weekly average heifer price across all those reported weight categories was $177.86 per hundredweight in Saskatchewan.
And what were the factors pushing these prices down?
Well, once again, Jim, I feel like I'm a broken record these days. You know, our Saskatchewan basis, it strengthened, so that was good. That's our good news. But then when we go to look at feed prices, they were up across the board last week. So that, you know, including spot prices for barley, spot prices for corn, as well as the corn futures. But if we want to look at today, the corn futures are showing a decrease in the market, so we'll have to watch that trend.
What were marketings?
Well, those went up quite a bit, so that could also be, you know, something playing into it. Fall runs in full swing, with CanFats reporting a total of 39,920 head of cattle sold in Saskatchewan last week, and that's up quite a bit from the previous week of 15,513, although it's still less than the 47,265 head that were marketed during the same week in 2019.
What happened with market-ready cattle prices?
Well, we've got the price of D2 slaughter cows. They saw a decrease of $3.92 per hundredweight to average $76.75 per hundredweight. And then when we look at the D3 slaughter cows, they also saw a decrease. The prices were lower there by a little bit of a larger amount, $5.08 per hundredweight from the previous week, and they averaged $66.25 per hundredweight. And when we look at the average price of live steers in Alberta, they ended the week at $136.50 per hundredweight.
Natasha Wilkie compiles the weekly cattle price summary for the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture. It's now 12:41 in Saskatchewan, 1:41 in Manitoba.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for December closed at 104.05 today. That's up 65. February live cattle closed at 107.02, up 62. November feeder cattle closed at 132.30, up 172. January feeder cattle closed at 128.42, up 165. March feeder cattle closed at 128.05, up 160. December lean hogs closed at 67.65, down 10. February lean hogs closed at 68.05, up 40. And that's the livestock market conditions. It's now 12:42 in Saskatchewan, 1:42 in Manitoba. And aphanomyces was an issue in some pea and lentil crops this year. The root rot sharply reduces yield, and it's not recommended to grow peas or lentils on that field for at least 6 to 8 years. Growers planning to seed peas and lentils next year should examine the field history closely. For example, were there yellow patches, or was it wet early in the growing season like it was this year, as well as in most areas of Saskatchewan in 2012, 2014, and 2016. Saskatchewan Pulse Growers held a webinar last week with Dr. Shema Chatterton, the Pulse and Special Crops Pathologist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in Lethbridge. She says doing a soil sample in advance of growing peas or lentils is a good idea. This will let you know the level or risk of infection.
I still do recommend that you try to sample the fields of interest. Because now we're talking about fields that maybe had peas or lentils in them 3-4 years ago, you can do the sampling now in the fall, or you can do it in the spring. The oospore levels aren't really going to change that much. And so we do recommend this to try to give you an idea of the risk for that field. But having said that, we do have to be aware of false negatives. So we're going to use additional factors to make the decision. And then also consider a soil bait test that said you can do on your own.
Chatterton talks about where in the field soil samples should be taken.
And so to maximize success of pre-plant sampling, it's very important that you choose your sampling spots wisely. Choose those low spots, those water tracts, seepage areas, low yielding areas. Also consider submitting multiple soil samples to test rather than just one. I know that there is cost involved, but the more soil samples that you have, the more likelihood you are going to get at least one positive.
Reviewing field history is also important, starting with a review of previous crops grown.
The more times peas or lentils have been grown in that field, the more likely you're going to have high inoculum levels. The problem is that there's no magic number to say, okay, you've had peas in that field three times, you're done, you can't plant peas anymore. We don't know what that number is. Sweden, they did some research in the early 90s, and they found that some pea fields, if there was a pea every 6 years, some fields took three times of growing peas before the phantomyces problem got out of control. Other fields, it took five or six or more times before you had a problem.
Chatterton says it's important to note the early season weather conditions during the last time a pea or lentil crop was grown on a particular field.
And so now if we're here into 2021 and you're thinking about planting your peas, fortunately, we had some pretty intervening dry years back here. So if you're in 2021 and you want to go into a 2017 field, you should be okay because we had below average moisture in pea fields that year. If you're thinking of going into a 2016 field, then you might run into issues because for the most part, that was a very wet year. So again, this is just averaged across each location. You'll need to think about this specifically for your field.
Chatterton took some questions on the webinar, including one on the prevalence of aphanomyces.
The hypothesis is that a native pathogen that's just in low levels everywhere, and this is why crop history or crop frequency is so important, because every time you're putting a pea lentil crop into that field, you're basically bumping up the aphanomyces levels just a little bit, little increments until you hit that threshold level. Again, there's probably some unknown factor having to do with fields on that, because, you know, some people will have grown peas and lentils for a long time and never have a problem, and other people it's five or six times and there's a problem, right? So exactly what that is, we don't know, but yes, the hypothesis is that it is just present in all the soils across the prairies.
And unfortunately, there are no easy solutions at this point.
It's just really challenging, you guys. And like, no matter what we try, so far, we really haven't had great success. There's no silver bullet for this disease. And something that I'm starting to think more about is patch management. And I think this is going to become very important moving forward, where you have those yellowing patches in your field, and we can tell you what to do with them to try to reduce spread throughout the whole field. But we're not there yet, but that's my dream, is that we'll be able to come up with something.
There are alternative pulse crops which can be grown on a field with aphanomyces.
Chickpea, soybean, fava bean are all good options if you have an aphanomyces infested field. There are some varieties of fava bean that do appear to be susceptible, but those are the older varieties. So the newer ones, the newer small seeded varieties seem to be resistant. The same with soybean. Chickpea supports a small amount of aphanomyces growth, but really not a lot, and we don't actually see it causing a lot of damage to the roots, but we can find oospores in the roots every once in a while.
Dr. Shema Chatterton is the Pulse and Special Crops Pathologist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in Lethbridge. She was on a SASC Pulse Growers webinar last week talking about aphanomyces and reducing the risk of root rots for peas and lentils in 2021. It's now 12:48 in Saskatchewan, 1:48 in Manitoba, and GX and Agriculture will return in 60 seconds time.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed down for the most part today. January canola closed at $544 per metric ton, down $3.90. March canola closed at $548 per metric ton, down $3.10. December Minneapolis wheat closed at $561.50, down 3.5 cents. December Kansas City wheat closed at $549.25, down 2.75 cents. December Chicago wheat closed at $615.75, down 4.25 cents. December corn closed at $4.16 per bushel, down 1.75 cents. January soybeans closed at $10.76.50, down 7 cents. December oats closed at $3.08 per bushel, up 1.5 cents. And that's the commodities update. It's now 12:51 in Saskatchewan, 1:51 in Manitoba. And the Swine Health Information Center has added new tests for identifying specific strains of porcine sapovirus and pseudorabies to its diagnostic assay catalog. Swine Health Information Center Executive Director Dr. Paul Sundberg tells us what the catalog is.
Well, the Swine Health Information Center is charged with monitoring for emerging diseases, for making sure we're prepared for emerging diseases as best we can, and that includes diagnostics. And so the catalog itself is a compilation of the various studies and diagnostic tests that the center has funded over the five-year period now. We keep compiling these things and putting them into this catalog. The reason we catalog them is because they aren't commonly used or thought of tests. It's not like this is a PERS PCR or a PED PCR. This is a sapovirus, and this may be a virus that's of interest in different areas or different diagnostic labs. The issue is that we don't want to miss something. So we put these tests in of the different kinds of diagnostic tests that diagnosticians could consider to use during a difficult case, and put them in the catalog such that we make sure that everybody knows that they're available. Those researchers that develop these tests for us have agreed to make them available to any diagnostic lab that asks. And so what we've done is we've compiled all of those that are available into one source so we can distribute that in diagnostic labs and diagnosticians. So if they have a case that they look at and go, I wonder if it could be this, then they have a way to get that test, that specific test, from somebody else. So we hope that it's a way to coordinate diagnostic tests, make sure that we're missing something that may be emerging.
Now, what is sapovirus?
Sapovirus is an intestinal virus for young pigs. It can infect pig pre-weaning and cause a moderate amount of morbidity, a moderate amount of chronic diarrhea in pre-weaned pigs. It has low morbidity, so few die, but they do continue to be sick and have diarrhea for quite a while they are still nursing. The issue with sapovirus is that it then causes that infection, that previous infection, causes a loss of gain post-weaning. So it carries over into the post-weaning phase. And one of the things we want to do is try to use this type of PCR test that we've developed to do a better job of screening pre-weaning diarrheas to find out exactly if the sapovirus has a prominent role in pre-weaning diarrheas, how it works, where it works, and try to know more about it, because again, we want to make sure that we don't miss an emerging issue that we may be able to identify early and address.
And what is pseudorabies?
Yeah, pseudorabies is a herpes virus. It's also known as Iteski's disease. It's a virus that can cause high loss in pre-weaned pigs. It can cause moderate losses, and I'm talking about mortality, moderate losses in finishing pigs. It can be chronically infect older pigs and be chronically shedded. Back in the 90s, the U.S. went through a pseudorabies eradication program. And so we want to make sure that what we have available is the current diagnostics such that we can detect that virus early should it get back here. It's not in the U.S. right now, and in the commercial pigs. And should it get into the commercial pigs, we want to make sure that we know quickly that we can find it.
How do these tests work, and how accurate are they?
Well, the pseudorabies test that's been developed, it was in the CFIA lab in Winnipeg. Dr. Runa Mbagala worked on this, and we're very fortunate to have that laboratory to help us with these kinds of questions. One of the things that we wanted to do was make sure that we were able to quickly differentiate the different types of pseudorabies viruses that are around the world. There's a very high pathogenic pseudorabies virus in China that is causing a lot of trouble in Asia and Southeast Asia. There's the classical pseudorabies virus that we've had in the U.S. that has been eradicated. And then there's the vaccine virus itself. And we want to make sure that we could differentiate should something pop up positive, that we could very quickly differentiate one kind from another. Because understanding what happened and the source of the virus is an important way of being able to address control and to be able to figure out the window of opportunity that got the virus into the country and how we can what we need to do to stop it.
What's the importance of bringing these new PCR tests online?
Yeah, really what we're trying to do here is we're trying to kind of think out of the box a bit and to ask what if and look at the different things that are circulating that are possibilities. And there may not be anything. We may have an increase in diagnosis rather than an emerging disease. There may be things that we find that are endemic and widespread, and it's really not emerging. We're just finding them better. But without these new diagnostic tests that are pushing the envelope for diagnosticians, we may miss something that will be important and something that we need to address. So it's a way to look at the holistic health of swine, try to figure out what could come at us, be prepared with what could come at us through better diagnostics and early detection. And that's the whole effort here for the center. So we're trying to do a better job to make sure that we keep our pigs healthy in North America.
And is there anything you would like to add?
I think both of these projects, Sapovirus and pseudorabies, is a good example of a collaboration and the willingness for the diagnosticians, for the researchers to all address these issues. We've all got to work together on it. The center can provide the tests. If they just sit on the shelf somewhere, then that's not going to help anybody. The issue here is to make sure they're distributed, they're available, they're ready to go into a diagnostic lab when needed. And that's really the value of this, and put a lot of credit into the researchers and the diagnosticians that are willing to look at these different outside-the-box types of issues.
Dr. Paul Sundberg is the executive director of the Swine Health Information Center. It's now 12:59 in Saskatchewan, 1:59 in Manitoba, and we'll return with your agriculture weather after these messages. Welcome back to GX in Agriculture. It's 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba, and time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Cloudy with a 50% chance of spotty flurries, winds northwest at 15 to 30, and a high of 4 degrees. For tonight, a 40% chance of early evening flurries, winds west-northwest at 15 to 30, and a low of minus 2. For tomorrow, cloudy with a 40% chance of spotty afternoon flurries, winds northwest at 15 to 30, a high of plus 3. For Thursday, partly sunny, winds south-southeast at 15 to 25, a high of plus 2. Friday, partly sunny, a high of plus 5. And Saturday, cloudy, a high of plus 1. In the Paw, it's minus 3 degrees. Swan River is at 0. Dauphin is at plus 1. Brandon and Roblin, minus 1. Show Lake Russell, minus 2. Regina is at plus 10. Saskatoon, plus 9. Hudson Bay, minus 2. Broadview-Mooseman, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, plus 3. Indian Head, plus 7. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a west wind at 21 kilometers an hour. 81% is the relative humidity. The temperature is plus 3 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.